You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
Do you love the Tabernacle Choir? This year, the choir's music is everywhere you are. Listen to your favorite choir songs and music and the spoken word anytime you want on Alexa by simply enabling the skill.
Alexa, play the Tabernacle Choir.
Now playing the Tabernacle Choir.
You can also download the Tabernacle Choir app, subscribe to the choir on YouTube, listen on Spotify, and have access to all their wonderful music. Happy listening.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL listeners. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. We'll be taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Governor, it pains me to say that we're reaching the end of summer, but we have some things to talk about. The water picture, for one thing. You said as we were talking off the air that people have been concerned about the water. They want to know how we're doing. So let's let them know.
Well, I'm happy to do that. And it's always fun to have a positive report after the past couple of years. But because of the runoff, and even though we had a warmer July, the ground was so saturated that the water didn't sink into the ground. It actually went where it's supposed to go. And that is into our rivers and streams and eventually into our lakes and reservoirs. So some very, very positive news. Our reservoirs right now are at 80% capacity, which is well above the average. The average for this time of year would be about 64%.
So that's great.
Last year, we were at 50%. So we were well below average last year, well above average this year, which means we have a leg up on next snow season. So again, hopefully it's a good snow season, but we're already in great shape. The Great Salt Lake peaked in June, as it always does, peaked at about 5.5 feet above where we were last year, which is tremendous. It's the best we could have hoped for. Just an amazing year, but still about 5 feet below where we would like it to be. So we're hoping, you know, we get another year kind of like last year, and we can add another 5 feet to that and get us back into that healthy, normal range that is so important for us. I'm so grateful for Utahns who have conserved, really done a wonderful job of cutting back, flipping their strips, finding, you know, water-wise landscaping for their yards. It's making a tremendous difference, and we're seeing it. So much better shape, but certainly not all the way where we want to be yet.
Right. So it kind of sends a mixed message when you say, oh, we have enough water, we're doing a lot better, because you don't want people to suddenly decide, oh, I can just use more water.
Exactly. And that's where I think people are getting better. They understand that this is not just a kind of a short-term thing. It's a long-term thing. Some years are better than others. If you use less in the good years, you'll have more in the bad years. And so that message and just changing our mindset about water, something that other states have had to do because they weren't as good at planning as we were to have the great reservoir systems that we have. Now it's time for us to have that paradigm shift. For people to understand that, you know, you should have, grass is great where you use it and play on it and certainly do that. But other places, we don't need that. And there are other amazing, beautiful landscapes. One of the things I've been most excited about is to see the innovation that's happening in xeriscaping and water-wise landscaping all throughout Utah. I'm seeing yards that are just gorgeous with very little grass. And we can certainly do more of that.
Gorgeous, so interesting as well.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the Great Salt Lake. There is a rally going on, maybe a protest of sorts against the inland port over concerns about the environment surrounding the Great Salt Lake. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so we've been very careful with the inland port. This is going to be the most environmentally friendly inland port anywhere in the country. It's the protest is about a spur, and we're looking to expand that to different counties to help them as well. A spur up in Box Elder County. And it's interesting, the development that we're talking about with the inland port is 2 miles from the bird refuge that they're worried about. So 2 miles is a long ways. There's other development in between that. And so again, it's people looking to get attention. It's fine, but we're not going to harm the bird refuge with the inland port.
Okay, it's election season. We have a special primary election coming up, but one of the big things people have been talking about is the GOP eliminating the presidential primary and moving to a caucus type system. What do you think about that?
Well, it's not the first time we've done it. We did it 8 years ago. So we did it heading into the 2016 election season, and it worked great. We had record attendance at our caucuses that night, and so I thought it was a very positive thing that time. It saves the state some money not having to run a presidential primary. Sadly, lots of people choose not to participate in the presidential primary anyway, so I don't know that there will be a large difference in the participation levels there. We'll be watching it closely. We'll be working very closely with the GOP. I'm grateful for the leadership there, for the chairman. Rob Axon's a great guy. He's doing incredible work, and so we'll see how it turns out. Sometimes we may get more participation because people are interested in coming together and talking to their neighbors about that presidential primary. I hope it matters. I'm usually we don't matter. We've tried to move up a little bit to get to that March timeframe so that hopefully Utah has a voice in it. I hate the way we select our primary candidates for the general election in this country. It doesn't make any sense to me that Iowa and New Hampshire are so much more important than states like Utah, and that they have a much bigger say in who it is, because if you don't do well in Iowa and New Hampshire, you know, maybe you survive to get to South Carolina and Nevada. But if you don't do well in those states, then you drop out and there's less choices. When we did the presidential caucusing last time, there were only three candidates left by the time we got there. You'll remember we started in the GOP with like 16 or 18, I don't remember how many, but by the time it got to Utah, there were only three left. It was Ted Cruz and Donald Trump and John Kasich, and there was amazing turnout there. People forget how that turned out. I think it was interesting if you go back and look at it, which I did. Donald Trump finished third. I think he only got like 9% of the vote, even though he was pretty much the presumptive nominee at that point. Ted Cruz did better. Even John Kasich performed better. And so I hope we have good choices when it finally comes to Utah, and I hope Utah matters.
Utahns, Americans have thought a lot about election security. Do their votes count? How does the party plan to make sure that this election is secure?
Yeah, well, the party works really hard on that. And I have not had those conversations directly with them yet. It's still very early. This was a decision that was just made. So over the course of the next 6+ months, they'll be working through the details of that, making sure that there is election security. There's no doubt that a caucus-type system does not lend itself to more security than we have at the state level. We have so many security lines in place when people are... And we have an election coming up, in fact. People will get to see that on display. Ballots are being mailed out for
thing on my list.
The primary now, yeah. But so we'll work very closely with them to make sure that they're doing everything possible. Sadly, we have had some breaches of security through the caucus convention system a while back. We had people trying to put two ballots in a ballot box, and people think that if they're hand counted that will be much more secure. It's actually less secure when you're hand counting, and so again that's why we have volunteers who are doing that work, but then we always have poll watchers, people who are watching them do the work to make sure that everything is above board.
Okay, before we move to the phone lines, let's just talk about the race to replace Congressman Chris Stewart. First of all, just your overall thoughts about how this race has gone.
Sure. Yeah, it's been an interesting one. The good news is that we have three Republican candidates that are wonderful. The Democrats have got their candidates as well, and they'll be working through that process. And so we're going to have good choices here in the state to replace my good friend. And I actually worked on Congressman Stewart's very first campaign. He was kind of a long shot when he ran the first time around. And I was very excited to see him get elected. He served for a decade. He's just been fantastic. So we're definitely going to miss him. But I'm excited about the options that we have. I want to remind people that this is a primary season, and so only a fourth of the state is participating in that one, the CD2, the second district, congressional district 2 race. But we have a lot of municipal elections that matter. There's there's mayor's races and city council races mostly, and sadly these municipal election primaries are by far the lowest turnout of any election in our state. So I'm hoping that people will vote. Your ballots should be coming as we head in. There's some important dates. August 22nd is voters can cast their ballots early at a polling location. If you want to do it in person, just get on your county clerk's website. You can see where to do that. August 25th is the last day to register to vote while to receive a by-mail ballot. So if you want your ballot mailed to you and you haven't registered yet, you got to do that right away. And then just a reminder that September 5th is primary election day. Polls will open at 7 a.m. And close at 8 p.m. Obviously, your ballots must be postmarked by that date. If you're going to send them in, make sure you get those postmarked. Just vote early. Get it out of the way, but please vote. It's really matters.
The low voter turnout always astounds me. Yeah. This is where you really have a chance to make a difference, especially in these local elections, and especially with so few people voting.
Well, and that's what always surprises me. People, sadly, we used to say in political science that there was a mantra that all politics is local, and that's completely flipped on its head. All politics is national now. What people don't realize is that who your city council member is impacts you a lot more than who the president of the United States is. It just does. Their daily decisions, so many things that are happening that impact your life on a day-to-day basis. And yet everybody pays attention to the, congressional races, the presidential races, and so many just don't even weigh in. And it means that not only does your vote count in a municipal election, it counts even more, right? Because you have even more power to impact a race as fewer people are participating. So definitely, definitely get involved. Get to know the candidates and make the best decision for you and your community.
You going to tell us who you're going to be voting for in the second congressional race?
We're very lucky.
Endorsing?
Yeah. So I'm not doing an official endorsement of anybody. I know all three candidates. I know them very well. I like them a lot. I've known Celeste for a long time. Celeste Molloy. She's the one who can hit the ground running the fastest. She's works for Congressman Stewart now. She's been involved in his office. She's working on all these issues. So she could just step into those shoes and run. So she has that going for her. The other candidates are great as well. I worked with Becky in the legislature, and Bruce has been the national committee man for the GOP. I've worked with him very closely over the past couple of years. They're both wonderful, wonderful individuals, and all three of them can do the job. The one interesting thing, this is where my bias does kick in. Mm-hmm. It's not an endorsement, but I will tell you my bias. As somebody who lives south of what we call the Payson-Dixon line, we haven't had a member of Congress forever who lived off the Wasatch Front. And Celeste doesn't. She lives in southern Utah. So that's very interesting, just from a geographical perspective to me, to get somebody who has that kind of rural perspective, which we don't see very often. And I certainly like that, but I'm not endorsing any of them. I think they're all wonderful candidates.
All right. Phone lines are open. We have callers waiting. Number to call is 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Thank you for joining us this noon hour. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. And James has been waiting very patiently on the line. Good afternoon, James.
Well, good afternoon, Maria, and good afternoon, Governor Cox. Anyhow, I just wanted to congratulate you, Governor Cox, on becoming a chairman of the National Governors Association. And I noticed your theme this year is to get governors to get people to, quote, disagree better, unquote. And I'm just wondering, would you say this is comparable to practicing the golden rule? And my only suggestion would be a motto kind of like disagree politely or disagree politely. Positively. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, James, thank you. That's very kind. As you mentioned, I do have the very unique and rare opportunity to serve as the chair of the National Governors Association. I'm grateful to my colleagues across the country. It is an organization that is a bipartisan. We take turns, Republicans and Democrats. So Governor Jared Polis of Colorado, the Democrat, is my vice chair. He'll be the chair starting in July of next year. And I have, after a lot of thought and debate, decided to choose this this kind of unique and different initiative over the course of the next year. Governors will be working together on this idea of disagreeing better. And yes, I do think that this has a lot to do with the golden rule and the things that we were taught growing up. But I do want to say one of the reasons we picked that wording and that theme is some people think that this is, oh, it's just about we all have to get along and kumbaya and another civility initiative. And I want to be very clear that that is not what this is about. Some of the criticism of it has come from people that, you know, and usually some of the most extreme people who say, no, we have to fight. And look, what I'm here to say is it is about disagreeing. It really is. It's about healthy disagreement. It's about passionate disagreement. Our nation was founded on profound disagreement. Our founding fathers understood this. They disagreed vehemently about many different issues, but they found a way to again disagree better, disagree without hating each other, without tearing each other down. The ability to try to understand what the other side is actually presenting, and again presenting in such a way that they're willing to listen to us. It's really about persuasion. Some of the most vocal folks out there on either side, left or right, they've gotten completely away from persuasion. They're yelling so loudly that they're not convincing anyone to join their side. And that's not how you change, how you win in this political environment. We actually have to convince people that what we're trying to do is right. And you can't do that if you're screaming at them all the time. So that's what this is really about. It's about finding ways. And it's very, I mean, the science behind this is incredible. We are using actual science from policy labs at Duke University, at Stanford University, at Dartmouth, where they have run experiments about how to help people come together without killing each other, to be perfectly honest, and figuring out how to do that. And we have to make that change in our country, or we are going to end up in a very dark place. So I very much appreciate the call, James, and thanks for your interest.
James, thanks for your call this morning. Let's go to the phone lines again. David is in West Valley. Good afternoon, David. What was your question? Okay, first of all, David, that is not the question that you said that you were going to ask. So I'm going to put you on hold and let you talk to the producer for a moment about that, even though, Governor, I'm sure you don't have a problem talking about that.
But no, I don't have a problem.
You originally wanted to talk about super high technology at the old Draper prison. So.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about the issue. Again, we can disagree without name calling. And that it's very appropriate to refer to people in such a derogatory way. We have some amazing transgender people here in our state. Some people that I've gotten to talk to, that I've gotten close to. We are one of those states that has limited transgender surgeries and puberty blockers in young people, which I think is really important as we look to Europe and other places that are dealing with this issue in a less polarizing situation, in a way where we're not name calling and finding better ways to do this. It became very clear that some of those very difficult decisions need to be made after brain formation has happened, and so that's why these very difficult decisions have been made here. But again, there are better ways to do that, and we don't need to treat people with that kind of disrespect and dehumanize people who are different than us.
David, I kind of made a point there, Governor, because we take all the calls, we answer all the questions, and I would like our listeners to be honest with us when they call. So, David, we are happy to answer your questions. The governor is definitely happy to answer your questions. But it's not about trying to fool us about what you're going to ask.
Yeah, we don't pick and choose the callers that come through, but we do appreciate when we understand what the call is going to be about.
Okay, there was another question about the prison that I wanted to ask you, Governor. This person says, is the state going to offset the cost of the new prison by selling off the land that the old one sat on?
Yeah, that's exactly the plan. So the Point development is incredible. I'm so excited about what's happening down there. Still very much in its early phases as we're working to get infrastructure. We're still tearing down the old prison and getting all of that land freed up. But the Point Commission has been working hard. They are in the process. They've selected the developer. They're in the process of finalizing the development agreement, which is the agreement that will will be used to make all of those decisions down there, and the pricing and everything else. And then the revenue that comes from that land will go to offset. It will go back into taxpayer coffers and replace the money that went out to build the prison. And so this is one of those unique win-win decisions that was made under the leadership of Governor Herbert and the legislature back when I was lieutenant governor to find a better way to utilize that land right in the heart of Salt Lake City for economic benefit, for jobs and in innovation. And I'm just telling you, this is going to be incredible. There are going to be some announcements over the next couple of years, I think, that that people will get really excited about. I think it's a place people are going to want to visit. I think we're going to have some iconic structures there. There's going to be open space there with some parks, but there are going to be some amazing businesses. Our institutions of higher learning will come together. Again, an innovation district that's happening there, and just a real job creator, an economic creator, and an amazing place for the people of Utah to enjoy.
All right, we're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. You can call us with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
Did you know you can get the three things you need to know delivered right to you? Just go to KSLNewsRadio.com, click on menu, and then newsletter.
Or go to the KSL News Radio app, and you click on menu, and then it's email alerts.
This is even easier. Just text the word inbox to 57500.
Get the top national and local stories with the three things you need to know newsletter.
The murder of two men forces their families to wrestle with impossible questions. Who is forgiveness for? Does everyone deserve a second chance? Follow season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon. I'm Maria Chaleos, along with Governor Cox. Number for you to call with your questions, 801-575-8255, or you can text us at 57500. Next listener, Gaina Lynn. Is this Gaina Lynn Condi? Gaina Lynn, are you there?
I am.
Hi, good to hear you. Great, thanks.
I'm so grateful for access and leadership from Governor Cox and Abby, and I think my question is probably a little twofold, and that is, with school coming back into session and mental health being, I know, an important issue for the governor, where do we see support for not just our students, especially with our mental health, but for our teachers as they are together sometimes longer in the school day than we are with them as parents?
Thank you so much, Gaylin. It's great to hear from you. I know this is important for you and for all of us that have been working in this space for so long. It's really interesting, and if I could speak on behalf of my wife for just a minute, when Abby was looking at her initiative, her Show Up initiative, she was actually initially going to focus on students. And as she was interviewing educators and parents and students and administrators, something became very clear to her, and that is that a lot of our teachers are not okay, and I think that's kind of at the heart of your question. And so she launched this Show Up for Teachers initiative as part of the four initiatives that she's working on that really focuses on teacher mental health. She launched a conference, and it was so excited this year. Just a few weeks ago in July, it had just exploded. It more than doubled over last year. We had over 2,000 teachers show up for that conference, and they were just showered with help from local businesses, from experts who came and shared best practices with them, and again resources to make sure that their mental health is good, and so that if you have a teacher who's in a bad place, their ability to teach our kids just goes downhill very quickly. But when a teacher is in a good emotional and mental space, their ability to teach goes up significantly. So this definitely bleeds over to our kids as well. And coming out of the pandemic, we're so lucky that we have teachers who survived that time, but certainly have not thrived, and we need to make life better for them, and that's exactly what we're doing now. So, you did mention students, and I think it's important that we bring that up as well. We've been working in lots of different areas here. We've added more school counselors, thanks to Governor Herbert and the legislature, and some initiatives that we worked on over the past few years than ever before. That's making a huge difference in our schools. As you know, we're really focused on the harms of social media. And we just launched a campaign that we're very excited about. Every family can and should visit the website socialharms.gov, I think is the, I hope I have that right. It's socialharms.utah.gov. If you go to socialharms.utah.gov, it has all of the data and information around how social media is damaging the mental health of our young people. But even better, there are resources there. So you can look at the statistics, you can hear the message from the U.S. Surgeon General, but then you can go down and look at what you can do to protect your child. It talks about creating a family media plan, creating tech-free zones to encourage our children to have more in-person interactions. Talks about modeling social behavior. Sometimes parents are the problem. Teaching our kids about the technology, reporting cyberbullying, all these different things that we can do as families to help protect our kids. So we've got more resources in the mental health space than ever before. I also encourage people to download the Safe Utah app. Make sure your kids have the Safe UT app. The ability to connect with a professional at the touch of a button when you're in crisis is a big deal. So we're going to keep working in this space, and hopefully we can help our teachers and our students.
Governor, despite the increases that you've given teachers in the past little while in salary, we are hearing about teachers leaving the profession in great numbers. Is this something that you're concerned about? Is there the state putting something in place, initiatives in place to incentivize new teachers?
Yeah. So it is something that we're worried about for sure. We lose about half our teachers in the first 5 years, and that's way too many, obviously. And so we have a lot of kids, and we need a lot of teachers, and we need good teachers. So we're working on that for sure. Working on ways to encourage people to get into the teaching profession, and the salary piece is a big piece of that. It's only one piece, though. We know that, and we're hopeful those increases that we passed in the legislature are just going into effect now into this school year. So we'll be watching very closely to see what impact those significant increases, the largest pay raise in our state's history for our teachers, will have on keeping people in the teaching profession.
All right. Next listener is Don in Layton. Good afternoon, Don. What is your question?
Hey, Governor. Thanks for the great job you're doing. And I guess I probably, with most Utahns, can say you're slam dunk for reelection.
Well, thank you, Don. That's very kind.
Hey, I was trying to understand what all was going on with this march with Slow-Mo Joe President Biden and with the new parks in southern Utah. Now, I think most Americans that know anything about national parks realize Utah has its fair share. So I'm just questioning, give us more insight on it. Why is the state upset about it? What I understand, a lot of the land that's being used is for these new parks or expanding these parks is land that's being used by ranchers for grazing. And I just kind of wanted you, maybe you could explain it for the layperson like me that doesn't really know what's going on with that issue too well.
Sure, Don. Yeah, and thanks for calling in. It's a question that I'm very concerned about, and so I'm grateful for your interest. So a couple things that I think are important. So this new national monument that the president declared a couple weeks ago, actually it doesn't come into Utah. So it's south of the Utah border in Arizona, and it's a huge one, another big one like Bears Ears and like Grand Staircase, which are both in Utah. I think it's 1 million acres, very close to 1 million acres down there. And so, but even though it does not come into Utah, it does affect Utahns. That's why we've taken such an interest in it, because as you mentioned, we do have lots of ranchers that graze on that land. And there are some other economic interests down there that are as well. So that's certainly a concern for us, and why I wrote a letter to the president and why I spoke to the president directly about it when he came here to visit. I did ask him to remove grazing from that petition, and we've been told that they are doing that, that they are willing to do that to allow grazing to maintain. So I do have to give them some credit again for their willingness to do that. That being said, as you mentioned, we are concerned with what these landscape sized monuments, 1 million acres, bigger than some states, at the just at the stroke of of a pen. It's very clear if to me in the reading of the Antiquities Act, the statute that says that that a monument declaration should be the smallest size possible to protect the the antiquities, the things that we're trying to protect there. And so there's no question in my mind that having a declaration of a million plus acres is far larger than the smallest size necessary to protect the antiquities. Now that case, we filed a case on those Utah monuments. It's on appeal right now to the 10th Circuit. We anticipate it's going to go all the way to the Supreme Court. We're very excited to get it there and anxious to get it there, because in another case last year, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court signaled that he was concerned about these very large monuments and signaled that there may be a willingness of the Supreme Court to take this up and to limit, as we think the statute does, the power of a president to just use this in such a broad fashion. So that's a long way of saying stay tuned, more to come, but I think over the next year or two, we'll hopefully get some resolution there.
Next listener, before we take a break, Governor was asking about the ETA on fixing all the potholes and road damage in the state.
Well, there certainly was some road damage because we had such a long winter. We've been working really hard on that at the state level to fix those potholes. We are constantly fixing potholes. We've received some recognition as being one of the best states for that. It is harder when you have the freeze thaw cycle that we have here. We get more potholes than other states that don't have that. But certainly our local municipalities and others are also, counties are trying to do the same thing. We did get some additional funding from the legislature, especially in our rural areas, for transportation, for roads that they have not had in a long, long, long time. Desperately needed. Something I campaigned on, something I'm very, very passionate about is helping our rural communities. That money just comes in July. So they're just now getting that money, and they can now use that to help, repave, resurface and fix potholes. And so I think you'll see more of that happening as we move into the fall.
Quick break, and then we'll be back with the final segment of Let Me Speak to the Governor. Number to call, 801-575-8255. Text us, 57500. And thank you for spending your time with us this noon hour. Thanks for all of your questions and calls as well. And back to the phone lines. David is on the line from Summit County. And David, what was your question? Good afternoon, David. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Fine? Yes, go ahead.
Yes. I want to ask, I believe the governor is a very decent man, and I want to ask this question as politely as possible, but it seems to me that the governor has made certain decisions along the way that, in order to placate the base and his party, that are inconsistent with his values, whether it's eviscerating my vote through redistricting, attacking public lands, embracing the hateful vitriol of Governor DeSantis, and refusing to completely condemn and disassociate himself from our bigoted, anti-Semitic, authoritarian ex-president, and not to mention the mountains of alleged criminality. I just, I guess I don't understand, or I'd like to try to understand how you reconcile some of these decisions. How much of one soul is, are you willing to sell in order to retain power?
Well, thank you, David, for that very kind evisceration. I have to just completely disagree with the premise. What you're saying is, if you don't agree with everything that I believe in, then you don't have a soul. And that's just a terrible way to live your life. I can sleep very well at night, and I feel that I have represented my values at every turn. This country, again, is not founded on agreeing with everything. And I take the decisions that I make very, very, very carefully. And I feel very strongly about those decisions when I make them. Now, this is also, politics is the art of the possible, and I think you understand that. You mentioned the redistricting maps, I could veto a veto-proof majority of the legislature. That makes absolutely no sense, and that's politically very stupid, a very stupid thing to do. So I didn't do that. You want to gerrymander the state for Democrats? That's what you're asking for. The Republicans in leadership here in the state wanted to gerrymander the state, you know, to benefit Republicans. And so those are disagreements, and we can have healthy disagreements, and we can fall out on different sides of those issues. And so that very type of attitude, I think, is very destructive. This idea that if you don't agree with me on everything, then you are morally defunct, that there is something terribly wrong with you. And that leads to, again, a very dangerous place. And you're doing the very thing in the way you ask that question, in the way you're trying to position yourself vis-a-vis me and my party. You're doing the exact thing that you're accusing Donald Trump and others of doing. It's the exact same thing. It's just another side of the same coin. And it's very disheartening to me to hear people. That's not how you have a conversation. That's not how we disagree better. That's not just the way you posit those questions is going to do exactly what's happening. That is to cause me to put up a front, to say now you're attacking my character because I disagree with you on a few issues, and that's not good for our society. We need to be able to have conversations. We need to sit down, as I do with my Democratic colleagues, and ask, why is it that you voted this way on that bill? Help me understand what is it the core of it. And when I do that, then I can understand, oh, you're not a bad person. I can see that. We just have a disagreement, and maybe we can find some ways to work together. And I hope you would really reconsider the way the way you think about Republicans and people who disagree with you.
Next listener, Governor, is asking, they say Tesla is looking for a new site for another factory. Is Utah making any effort to attract Tesla?
So we are always looking with Tesla, with any big company that's looking to expand. Utah is on the map right now. I can tell you, as we talk to economic developers across the country, Utah is very high on their list. And so as those opportunities come, we have an entire group here in the state that's all they do. They look at those opportunities. And so we did look at Tesla before when they chose their large battery manufacturing plant that ended up in Nevada. We were on the list. We certainly had conversations with them. That will happen again. We will continue to do that. And looking for ways to attract companies that make sense here. Manufacturing is great. We love bringing manufacturing back home. In fact, just yesterday, I went and visited a company that is greatly expanding their manufacturing here. It's a startup called Taurus. They're doing amazing work in the energy storage sector of the economy. We love seeing these manufacturers come to Utah and grow, and we would love to have anything related to Tesla and Elon and his companies here in Utah.
Back to Trent, who is in Saratoga Springs. Trent, what was your question this afternoon?
Hey there. I was trying to get a hold of you a couple months ago, and I just happened to get in the truck between hospitals and thought, let me just call in while I got it. So, my question is regarding school attendance and truancy. I'll give a brief little background for those who may not know. When the pandemic started, when we came back into in-person education, a lot of kids were missing out and skipping, and there were some truancy things that basically got put on hold. So truancy is not enforceable whatsoever for eighth grade and older at the present time. It was supposed to go back to effect 2022, and then again this year. A co-sponsored bill with Kathleen Reby, who I believe is running against you, maybe. No, she's running for Congress. Anyhow, it was approved with an earmark in it that extends truancy to 2027. I've talked to the local school teachers, principals, and Alpine District administrators. They're all quite frustrated with the current path that the government set forth of just basically kicking the can down the road and nobody taking charge and fixing this problem. So I guess my question is more direct. Do you have a plan to reinforce truancy for those, I'll say, mischievous minors that like to skip out a little too much when all authority is taken away from an administration? And
yeah,
I'll hang up and listen to you answer there.
Thanks, Trent. Thank you. We've had these conversations with teachers. When that first truancy bill passed a few years ago, we didn't see a huge uptick, but certainly you're right. Since the pandemic, we have seen a significant increase in truancy. It's a concern because if you look at the data, the more days of school a student missed, there's a direct correlation there to their ability to succeed in school moving forward. And and too many kids who miss a significant amount of days just they stunt their potential growth as they continue onward. So we I know we're working very closely with DHHS, Juvenile Justice, and Youth Services on this issue. It's again we've made some changes over the past with regards to what we're doing with our youth and youth justice, trying to keep them from getting sucked into that juvenile justice system, which also leads to very terrible outcomes. And so we don't have a complete decision yet on what we're going to do based around truancy. But I can tell you that I think that will be a topic that comes up in the next legislative session. So stay tuned.
Governor, we only have about a minute and a half left, and we have many callers and questions left, but I'm just going to ask you a couple while we have in the remaining time. Joan and Draper wanted to know, is there a way for seniors over 85 to get exemptions from property tax?
Yes, there is. And again, it's based on your income. You should reach out to your local county. They have the ability under statute to grant those exemptions based on your income. So yes. Reach out to your local county on that one.
And final question, what's stopping Utah from removing the tax on Social Security?
We've removed it on most Utahns. So unless you're making, I can't remember the number now, I think it's over $75,000, then you're not paying any tax on Social Security. And we've gotten really close to removing that completely. And I hope we'll get there soon.
Governor, thanks as always
for
being
Maria.
Willing to spend your time with us and answer questions.
Thank you.
KSL FM Midvale, KSL Salt Lake City. Listen on the KSL News Radio app and in your car at 102.7 FM. KSL News Radio, your all-day companion for news.
The murder of two men forces their families to wrestle with impossible questions. Who is forgiveness for? Does everyone deserve a second chance? Follow season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.